It is my pleasure to introduce Peggy Melanson. And she often writes for local newspapers and magazines under the name Chef Nostalgia. And I think that's very appropriate because her stories fill you with the kind of belly laughs that leave your heart feeling full. And her stories range from discovering the meaning of Buddhism and the MBTA to what it's like to grow up in the 50s in Boston. She has appeared on television, on the radio, in newspapers, and normally artists have like a big fancy quote from either the Boston Globe or the Phoenix or the Herald. Peggy's quote is from none other than Congressman Michael E. Capuano. And so I'm just gonna read it straight out. Through her accomplishments, Ms. Melanson has become an integral part of the cultural landscape of Greater Boston. Well, I think that says it all. Why don't you please welcome Peggy Melanson.
I wonder if these things come off. Well, who knows? I'll have to use this one, I think. Can you just pull it right out? Okay. Hear that little pop sound? Wasn't that fun? I passed out a bunch of menus. So in a minute, I want somebody here in the audience to volunteer to read me my courses because I am old and forgetful and I tend to forget which story follows which story. But first of all, I want to say thanks to Passim, who has the best pumpkin kibbeh in the world, and also to Ray Linda Wode and Laura Packer for having me here tonight. I love Passim's. I love this stage. It's like I've turned into the biggest ham in the world when I get up here. Lock the doors, don't let anyone out. So, now it's time for storytelling. Has everybody got their lollipops ready? By the way, folks, my storytelling stool, I paint them. This one's mine, I have three. This is from the Three Apple Storytelling Festival. Now, who wants to volunteer to give me the first story? Raise a hand. Oh, I see a friend of mine, a shill in the audience, named Jane Tuttle. Go for it. The Gates of Hell. Well, as I said to a few people before the show, if anybody is really a practicing Catholic, they may want to leave by the side door. Because this is a story about growing up Catholic in the 50s. Now, I was raised in the south end of Boston. Not the north end, not the west end, the south end. A lot of people don't know there was a south end, but there was. I lived on Sharon Street, which is off Harrison Avenue, which points towards the Cathedral School. Now, I went to the Cathedral School for as long as I went there. And I come from a background of my mother being Irish and my father being French. My father was from Nova Scotia, Canada, from Sonierville. He spoke French as his first language and English as his second language. So naturally at home, he said, pass the salt in French, pass the sugar in French. One time while I was attending Catholic school, one of the nuns heard me mix up my French with my Latin. And for some stupid reason, they wanted us to learn Latin. So the nun trooped all the way down to my house with her little black habit with the little round bib and the little pointy thing up at the top and told my father to stop speaking French because Peggy was mixing it up with Latin. Now, the sad part about this is that he did stop speaking French. He never spoke it again in the house. So I never got to learn his language. Now we go back to the Catholic school with this nun. And I'm sitting in the classroom. I think I was 8 or 10. Who knows? I remember the incident so well, but I don't remember the age. I just remember the fear. Sitting in the classroom next to John LeBeau. John and I were having a friendly little chat. And Sister was at the blackboard writing something. Her name was Sister Xavier. We called her Sister Xavier Cougat after a band leader of those times. And just as John LeBeau said something hysterically funny, which made me laugh, Sister turned around and caught me and said, Maggie Melanson, you get up, get over there to the corner and kneel down before the Holy Blessed Virgin Mary's statue. I don't know why, but every single classroom in every Catholic school from grammar school to high school had the Blessed Mother in the right-hand corner, I don't know why, with the little blue dress with the hands down like this, with this beatific face, smiling down, watching the misery happening in the classroom. Get up and get over to the Blessed Virgin Mary statue and kneel down before her and ask her to help you stop talking in class. I go over and I'm, what do? You go over. Bony knees. I was skinny in those days with the uniform on, with the dress. I'm kneeling down with the knees wobbling, and I had to go to the bathroom. Now, the last thing in the world you're going to do is raise your hand while you're kneeling before the Blessed Virgin Mary with all the kids throwing spitballs at you and giggling. Kneeling there, fold your hands properly. So I had to fold my hands properly before the Holy Blessed Virgin Mary. And I'm getting angrier and angrier. Why are they punishing me with my religion? When all of a sudden, I hear John LeBeau talking to Jimmy Young on the other side and glance over out of the left eye and see that sister looks right up at the two of them and says absolutely nothing. The two of them are giggling and laughing. Now I know what they mean about devils, because one jumped right inside me. Right in, shoo! And I looked up at the beautiful face of the Holy Blessed Virgin Mary and jumped up and said, you aren't ever going to punish me with my religion again. And I picked up the statue of the Blessed Virgin Mary and heaved it against the blackboard. And I watched as it crumbled to the ground with the head rolling behind sister's desk. And I saw a cloud of dust rise as the blackboard began to crack down in upon itself. And sister had her hand like this pointed at me when I realized, oh, shit. The lightning is definitely gonna get me now. And as I headed towards the door, I heard the most incredible sound I've ever heard in my life. It was crack, 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 as all of the rest of the blackboards around the entire room began to crack and fall in upon the frames and fall to the floor in a cloud of gray dust. And that's when I head out the door before the lightning could get me and ran all the way down the street to Albany Street to where my father worked. Went in to where my father worked, straight past everybody. He was a welder, and he had his welding glasses on. And I ran up to him and threw myself around his legs saying, I'm never going back again. I don't care. You can kill me. I'm not going back ever again. Never. They're not going to punish me with my religion ever again. They had me kneeling down before the Holy Blessed Virgin Mary, and my knees were wobbling, and I had to go to the bathroom, and I'm never going back. You can kill me. And he said, in French, what is this all about? I had to repeat it. He said, never mind. They did what? They knelt me in front of the statue with the knees and the shaking and the wobbling, and I had to go. This is the moment he decided not to speak any more English. It was all French. He grabbed me by the hand, and my feet, I don't think, ever touched the ground, because they were like, it was behind him as we headed towards the cathedral school. And I'm saying to myself, he's delivering me. He's hand-delivering me to the gates of hell. There's no question. Oh, God. As we head towards We go charging into Sister Superior's office. Sister Honora, I have never forgotten the name. She's dead now, so I can get away with this. She can't get me. We charge up to Sister Superior's office. My father shoves me behind him as I'm hanging onto his leg, trying to get away. Shoves me behind me with one hand, and he points his finger at the sister like they do to everyone, and said, half in English and half in French, "You are never to punish my daughter with her religion ever again. If you ever punish her again, in any way, shape, or form, with her religion or with God or with the Holy Blessed Virgin Mary, I will take her out of the school and bring her to a public school." That's the worst threat you can ever make. In a Catholic school, you're going to take her. What? All the while, Sister Honora is backing up in her chair going, now, dear, that's with an A-H at the end. That's the Boston accent. Now, dear, just calm down. Just calm down. My father leaned over as she finally crashed against the wall behind her in a chair, leaned over and shoved his finger right up to her nose and said, "And another thing, I'm not paying for those blackboards either." And we turned around and walked out the door. When I went into class the next day, it was a different classroom. The nun's face stayed red for the rest of my time there. And the kids stayed a good distance away from me, probably because they were afraid of the lightning that's going to get me sooner or later. But I have to tell you, there was a grand lot of respect that went on after that. And that's the story of the gates of hell. Thank you. Now, I think I have one more story. This is for some of my Catholic friends here. I did this purposely today. It was for a few of my Catholic friends. So what's the second story now? Jane, you want to do it again?
Confirmation.
For those of you who are not Catholic or Christian, confirmation is sort of like a bar mitzvah. You know, in Judaism, it's a bar mitzvah. And years ago, though, girls couldn't have confirmation. Bar mitzvahs. I think they can now, can they? Yeah. What is it? Bar mitzvahs? Forget it. I can't pronounce it. But anyway, confirmation was, for the Catholics, a way of becoming a soldier of the One. A soldier of Christ. Now, even to this day, people give Jesus' name as Jesus Christ, like Christ was his last name. It's time we should tell everybody Christ was not his last name. Christ just means the One. So to receive confirmation was you took a new name so that you really became pure and a soldier of Christ. Boys got dressed up in cute little suits, and girls got dressed up like they did First Holy Communion with the white veils and the whole, it's so stupid when I look back on it, with the little veils and the marriage, little wedding gowns for girls. So you go up to the altar and you kneel down and you take a new name. You have a sponsor that stands behind you and carries a piece of paper and gives it to the cardinal. It has to be a big shot cardinal. It can't be just an ordinary priest who gives you this name. So we're in class and sister says, "Okay, boys and girls, write down the confirmation name that you'd like to take." So I'm sitting there going, gee, my friends, I want to take the name Jane, but I also want Eileen. Sissy was my best friend, and her name was Eileen, and I like that. But then, you know, I just want to take all these different names. And what the hell? So we're writing down, and John writes the name James after his father, and Mary writes the name Rose after her aunt, or whatever. So I write down Margaret, Rose, Jane, Elizabeth, Eileen. And the nun comes over, she's gathering them up, and she says, "What is this? You can't take all those names. You can only take one, and it has to be a Bible name. You can't take Jane. You can't." And I'm looking at her going, "But I can't choose." She says, "You're taking Elizabeth. That's it. You're taking Elizabeth. That's a saint's name. takes and crosses out the names, throws the paper back at me. Everybody folds up their paper and goes about their business. Now I'm sitting there going, I still can't choose, and I don't want to take Elizabeth. I want Margaret Rose Jane. That's what I want. Now, my sponsor was my favorite aunt in all the world. Her name is Margie. Aunt Margie. She smiled at everything. She's the one that taught me that it's wonderful that the sun shines. She taught me it's wonderful that it rains. It's wonderful that things die because then things get born. I mean, she was so cool. She was a little la-la most of the time. But she was my sweetheart. She swam, and she used to whistle. She was a veterinary nurse, and she was just a sweetheart. She loved me to pieces. Everything I did was perfect as far as she was concerned. But again, we have to remember she's a little ditzy. I don't want to say that in a bad way, but La La Land. She was my sponsor. So I said, okay, how can I manipulate this? So the day comes, I get dressed up in my cute little outfit, my little white dress. I actually have a picture of that, and I have to find it to have it enlarged for the story. With my cute little face with the little veil, little lace at the bottom of the dress. Walk down the huge aisle of the cathedral church, which is a huge altar. And the cardinal's hats are all up, sort of like at the Boston Gardens, where they have all the flags and everything. There's all the cardinal's hats. Walk down, all the girls on one side and the boys on the other with the little sponsors walking down to the altar. And at this time, it's Archbishop Cushing. Big shot, really big shot, because he wasn't just a cardinal. He was Archbishop Cushing. He's going to give us, boom, our confirmation name. Get a little slap on the cheek that says, Soldier of Christ. And then he says your name, and that means it's official. Whatever name he gives you, it's yours for life, and it's legal. So we go trooping down with the hands all folded. My aunt's right beside me, kneel down at the altar. My aunt Margie, standing behind me, puts her right hand at my shoulder. I reach up and hand her the piece of paper. Because she's going to hand it to the archbishop. The archbishop walks along, and he's going, John, Mary, whatever, plunky smacking them on the side of the... He gets to me. And my aunt's like, oh, and she looks so wonderful and she's so cute. She hands him the paper and she's so proud of herself. Archbishop Cushing looks down at the piece of paper. And he looked up at me real fast. And I saw his eyes glow with mirth as he said, I confirm thee. Margaret, Rose, Jane, Elizabeth, Eileen, Melanson. And just as he said that, I heard the big intake of breath from the nun in the front row right behind me. Again, I knew that I was ready for the gates of hell after this. Thank you. All right, we're letting Jane do this again. What's the next one?
The morgue.
The morgue. Well, since we're in Boston, I can tell you about this. I lived, again, as I told you, on Sharon Street, which is off Harrison Avenue, which is right near the cathedral, but it's also right near the Boston City Hospital, which is now the Boston Regional Medical Center. In fact, my house on Sharon Street is part of the Boston Medical Center, too. They tore that neck of the woods down. I mean, it was a poor neighborhood. In fact, the house I was in is right across the street from the Joshua Bates School, and to this day, I don't know why they sent me way the hell down to the cathedral when I could have just fell out my door and into the public school. But, you know, you're a Catholic. So, I hung around with two friends, Bernice and Sissy. Now, I, of course, was the ringleader of this gang, and we were either the Three Musketeers or the Three Stooges, depending on what we were doing. Depending. Now, Sissy came from a family of 11 Irish kids. And I don't know why, but she was terrified most of the time. I don't know if it had something to do with too many brothers and sisters. I don't know. All I know is that if you went up behind her and went boo, her face would break out with these incredibly huge blossoms all over her face, in her hands, mostly on the inside of her arms, terrified. At other times, it was known to wet her pants. Not often, but, you know, she did. So I don't know why Sissy hung around with Bernice and me, because all we did was do things that were enough to scare half the world. You know, she'd trail along behind us. I think it was like maybe she could get brave by osmosis or something. But Sissy was the three of us all the time, Sissy behind us. And we used to go down to Albany Street, take a right instead of a left, and my father's would go to the hospital because the Boston City Hospital had the most incredible hallway that ran down the middle of it. If anybody's ever been over to the Santa Maria Hospital in Cambridge, they have one that does this, which would be really cool for our purposes. But now it's a nursing home or something. But the Boston City Hospital really had the best winding hallway. I mean, I've driven down that in a wheelchair with my dad, but I've also done a few other things there. We were known to take our roller skates. Now, the roller skates we had were those metal ones with the little that clipped onto your shoe, and you had to have a key. Is there anybody here old enough to remember those? And you'd wear the key around your neck, so you wouldn't let, you'd skate a while, would fall off, you put your foot, and you have to use the key. Well, the three of us would put the skates over our shoulders, walk down Albany Street, go in through the door, and stand up at the corner of the doorway to this hallway. And quietly, when no one was looking, put the skates on. And then fling ourselves through the door and go careening down the hallway. Bounce off the wall over here and bounce off over to the air. Much like they do with the skateboards and the rollerblades. You know how they do this in some of these places they have set up? Well, we had one at the Boston City Hospital. I mean, there were a few wheelchairs we missed, a few people on crutches. We tried to do it when it was empty, but that wasn't always possible. And on occasion, we got busted, so we were told never to come back. Of course, we agreed, oh, of course, we won't. Don't tell our mother, oh, it's okay, blah, 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 and off we'd go. One day, we were walking down Albany Street without our skates. And we were trying to figure out what to do with ourselves. Well, what the heck, let's just go in and see what's going on at the hospital. So we went into a side door that we had never gone into before. And when we went in, we realized that we were downstairs. And right in front of us was swinging doors. We'd never seen swinging doors before. It was the first time. Doors without knobs. I mean, there has to come a time when you haven't seen swinging doors, and this is your first time. So we pushed through the swinging doors, and we realized that there's a ramp. Oh. Then we look up, as we peek into the swinging doors, and we see icebox doors, one on top of the other, all the way down both sides of this room. No one's in the room, so we go down the ramp. We're at the foot of the ramp, and little red flags are going up, and little bells are ringing in our heads, but we're not paying any attention. We're saying, well, what do you think? What do you think this is? I don't know. I think it looks like maybe it's the kitchen. Look at all the icebox doors. It must be. Well, let's just go over there and look. And Sissy's saying, I don't think so. Little bells. It's all right, Sissy. Just, you know, let's just go look. See if there's any Coke. Maybe they've got some Coke in here. And they had handles that come down, not open like they do now. Pull out the handle and stand there and look. And we see an empty shell. It's empty, but it's long. How would people reach in and get anything? Let's try another one. So we try another one. That one's empty. We go over to the other side and we open up one, and Sure enough, there lays a dead body covered with a sheet, just like in the movies. We look down and we go, this is interesting. This must be where they bring the dead people. We knew about sort of dead people places, but from Frankenstein movies, but we really didn't know a lot about them. We thought we did. Didn't quite have the name morgue in our heads yet. So we go down to another one, we see another one. Now, I have to say that we did go back there a couple of times. I could tell you a story about each time, but because of time constraints, I want to limit this. So just suffice it to say that we went back one other time, Sissy, Bernice, and I. And now we're brave. We just walk down the ramp, look around, nobody's here. Okay, let's see if there's any new ones. Now, you know, we were darn lucky. When I stop and think of this as a grown-up, we were so lucky. We didn't see anything really bad. Think about it. I don't want to go there, but think about it. Whew. So this one time, it's on a Wednesday, we go back to the morgue, and we rush right down. We open up the one we know. We looked at these. We open up this, and out slides one of the trays, which hadn't happened before. And on it was a dead guy. A naked dead guy. No sheet. And we were like 12, 13 years old. In the 50s, you know, we never saw a naked person in our lives. Coming from our background, no, no, no. So as we're standing there discussing the various and sundry points and parts of this being on this trolley thing, we hear a voice say, "What are you doing here?" Needless to say, the three of us went from the Three Musketeers to the Three Stooges, and we crashed into each other, banged into each other. Sissy stood there and broke out with the red hives all over the place they met. Her face became red from the meeting and becoming one with her skin. As this man walked down the ramp and over to us and said, "I asked you, what are you doing here?" And I'm, we came to visit. We're here to visit my aunt. She's upstairs. Yes, we don't know what this is. We don't know anything about dead people. We're lost. We don't know anything. We're sorry. We'll leave. I'll go see my aunt. That's what's it. Come on, we'll just go see my aunt. The man says, "Don't move now. I just want to. Are you kids interested in pathology and things of that nature?" And of course we said, "Absolutely, yes," more positively. Had no clue what the guy was talking about. He said, "Would you like to see a body that's had an autopsy?" And we looked at him and said, "Of course, but we can't now because we have to go see my aunt." He said, "Well, I have to tell you something. If you're interested in this sort of thing, I would be glad to show you a body that's had an autopsy. But you need to come back on a Tuesday and Thursday while I'm here." Today's Wednesday, so I just filled in for someone else. I'm a doctor. He's learning, he's an intern, obviously, we figured that out later, that he's there and he's babysitting the morgue. That's his job. Part of his job is to babysit the morgue 2 days a week and somebody else babysits it another time. Seems like the guys that were babysitting it on Wednesday weren't there. They were probably napping someplace. But anyway, we agreed positively we'll come back on Tuesday and Thursday, whatever, and yes, we'd love to see the body with the autopsy. Can we go see my aunt now? And off we go. I go home to my big brother, Charlie, and say to him, God bless him, he was 11 years older than me, and he was very smart. Very, very smart fella. Anything you had to know, you just had to ask my brother, Charlie. So I said, Charlie, I saw this Frankenstein movie and somebody was talking about autopsies on people. What does that mean? And he said, autopsy, autopsy. Oh, an autopsy is when they cut up dead people and put them into little jars. Filled with alcohol so that they can tell what they died from. So I said, they cut up dead people and put them into little jars? Okay, thank you. He said, so that answers your question. I said, oh, yes. So I go off in a couple of days and I tell Sissy and Bernice, we're not going back there on Tuesdays and Thursdays to see any people in jars. So we're sitting on my front steps. And we're trying to figure out what to do. Oh, what the hell? You know, it's been a while. Why don't we just go back to the morgue? And Sissy says, I don't think so. Today is Wednesday. And the guy isn't going to be there. He's only there on Tuesdays and Thursdays. So Bernice and I looked at each other with a big smile, and we glanced over at Sissy, and we all got up with this sort of quiet, silent decision. And off we went. Down Sharon Street, took a right on Albany Street, went to the morgue. Without Harry Hinson, which, by the way, is his name. Never forgot it. Went down the ramp, and just as we were heading down the ramp, we looked over to the left, and we saw one of the trolleys with a body on it, with the sheet covering the whole thing. This story is really great for 13 and 14-year-old boys, because this is the best part of it for them. Look down. Ooh, a new one. We run down with their Sissy staying behind us, and we're lined up beside the trolley. I'm at by the head. Bernice is next to me, and Sissy's next to her. So we buck up to see who pulls the sheet down. Evensy, oddsy, oh, for God's sakes, I just pull a sheet off. And we look down, we see a dead guy with his hands folded, and he has on a striped three-piece suit with the vest and the whole nine yards, plus one of the felt hats with the little bend in it. Right beside him on the trolley is his hat and his wingtip shoes and a wax bag, partially open, filled with powdered sugar donuts. Now that's important because those are my favorite donuts. And I'm looking down and going, ooh, and I look over at Sissy and Bernice and say, powdered sugar donuts. So that was one of those, you know, looks that a decision is made. Just as I reach down to pick up the bag, we see the man's chest rise. And we hear, oh. We didn't stay there long enough to see if his chest went back down. What did happen was we began to hear the water sounds of Sissy wetting her pants into her penny loafers and all over the concrete floor. This all was like, seemed like in slow motion. Now I know what they mean. In a split second, while my hand was still raised over the wax bag, Sissy and Bernice shot as she went squishing up the ramp, and the two of them went flying through the doors, and then I realized, woo, I better get out of here, as I headed out behind them because I knew that this dead guy was coming right behind me. No question, he was right behind me. As I headed up the ramp, that they had just gone through, the doors came back and hit me in the head and the hands and knocked me back down the ramp, thud, 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 thud. And when I hit the back, thank God for being young, somehow I was able to make myself bend back forward or I would have fallen on my fanny. And I propelled myself up just as the doors were getting ready to close again, and zoom, off I went. Screaming down Albany Street, taking a left onto Sharon Street, up the stairs, three flights, into my house, down the hall, took a left into my bedroom, threw myself under the bed. Now, remember the old beds with the metal springies thingies? I had to push that aside as I shoved myself way up into the corner, reached up, grabbed my pillow, and hugged it to my chest and quivered in the corner. As I was just catching my breath, I heard the footsteps coming down the hall from the kitchen, heading towards my bedroom. Now, you all know who that was. We knew it was the dead guy. He found me. So as I'm quivering in the corner, praying, oh God, oh God, oh God, I see the bed scrunch down and hear the spring squeak. And then I hear a voice that says, Peggy, is that you? Are you under the bed? And then I see this face looking at me as my father says, get out from under that bed for God's sakes. There's nothing to be afraid of. And that's the story of the morgue. I don't know, what time do we have, Ray Linda? Because we got started a little late. I have one really great story. Good time?
You got 15 minutes.
Okay,